Heyo! This is Jossi, and this is my own podcast. Today we're talking about Luca. Luca is a sea monster. When he goes on land, he turns into a person. Once his family came on land, and they turned into people and looked for him. Luca tried to run away from them. Also, there are Vespas. Welcome to the conversation.
Jossi, what are you doing? You know you're not supposed to use my podcast equipment.
Silencio, Bruno. Welcome to Screenfish.
I've written so many things down.
Hey, look, Al's gonna come in clutch and I'm just gonna be like sitting here to be like, eh.
She's just gonna go back, have another sip of that beer. Welcome everyone back to Screenfish Radio. I'm glad you could join us this week as we are talking about Luca, Pixar's latest film that has been released straight to Disney Plus. I'm hearing that's much to the chagrin of the people at Pixar, but that is certainly the release schedule or the release strategy that they've taken. And I am always, always blessed to speak with Alan and Heather. Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
Hi, everybody.
Alan, we're not going to use the video. You don't wave.
Sorry. I'm looking all pretty and spiffy. And
I know, and you teach, do.
Teacher at work here.
It never stops. It never stops.
Our audience can take our word for the fact that, Alan, you look incredibly handsome today. So we'd like to thank you for that.
Tuxedo and bow tie, everything. Yep.
Yeah, the top hat was a little much, but I thought it worked. You making it work.
I'll change it to a fedora for you.
Marvelous. Luca is set in a beautiful seaside town on the Italian Riviera and is a coming-of-age story about one young boy experiencing an unforgettable summer filled with gelato, pasta, and endless scooter rides. Luca shares these adventures with his newfound best friend, but all the fun is threatened by a deeply held secret. He's actually a sea monster from another world just below the surface. Luca is available on Disney Plus right now. And as always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers, but let's get right into it. To you both, what did you think of Luca? Alan, why don't you
start? I'll let Alan start.
Okay. Well, it was a film that I had big hopes for going in, especially after I saw the first couple of minutes, because I realized that the director had created one of my favorite shorts, La Luna, back in 2011. So I think there were some very good things about the film. There were some things that I thought were a little hit and miss and suspect. But at the same time, I mean, it was good, but it was not Pixar's strongest in any way, shape, or form.
I'm there with Alan. I mean, like with all Pixar films, you know, it's beautiful. You know, the animation and the colors and the movement. Like there's always something engaging, at least to watch within the actual creation of a Pixar film. I loved the music. I loved the dialogue and incorporating just the different accents and, you know, mingling the languages. But I was bored. I'm just going to say it. I wanted to really like it, and it's cute. My kids have loved it, which is great. But there was something missing for me. I don't know what that is yet. And maybe as we talk, we'll kind of figure out, you know, kind of where that gap was. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty, but it's not standing out when I think of Pixar films.
Silencio Bruno.
I did love that. I'm gonna have to carry that around. There were moments and there are parts of it that are really engaging and funny and relevant, but I just, as a whole, from start to finish, I was just like, eh.
Did anybody else feel it was a strange love letter to Vespas? Like, I'm not going to lie. My wife and I have this conversation, have had this conversation for 20 years. I have always been fascinated by the Vespa. I've been told that they're not cool. I think they're as cool as a Harley Davidson. I think I would look better on a Vespa than a Harley Davidson. I think it works for me. They talk about Vespa a lot in this movie. I don't know why. And I don't know why that struck me as so strange, but it was such a specific brand.
It would remind me of something. I'm trying to remember. Oh, I might have to look it up and come back to this. But it reminded me of another movie where it was that sort of thing, like, But they were just like, somebody was just like obsessed with like the notion of oh gosh, I sound like an idiot right now. I know what I'm thinking of. I just can't remember what I'm thinking of. But where it was, you know, they had that, you know, basically idolizing an object, or it was a car. I can't remember what it was, but there was something familiar about it.
I think it just struck me as odd because it like, this is Disney. And I can't think of the last time that Disney mentioned any other specific brand, let alone dedicated two-thirds of a movie about it. But
maybe makes you wonder if there's a formal partnership there.
Yeah, I'm thinking cars here, you know, just sponsor three-fourths of it with Harley Davidson.
Did they?
Vroom.
I guess, but like, I okay, but in cars, it makes more sense. anyway, I hate to say it. I think maybe it's just that my expectations of Pixar films are so much higher than other films in general, higher than anime. Like, but yeah, I mean, I was saying to Heather earlier, like a bad Pixar film is probably still better than 40 or 50% of the things that you've seen out there. But to me, it was totally forgettable. Like it was not a film that it was stunning. I love that we've talked, you've mentioned the animation. I thought the animation was gorgeous. I love the style of it. It was a unique style, more unique in some ways to their other films. It was cinematic in its look, but it just fell sort of flat. Maybe it was the plot felt more familiar than it should have. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I mean, I wouldn't say it was awful, cause it wasn't, it's not Cars 2. Maybe it's Cars 3.
I love Cars 3.
Okay. So maybe it's not that
one. No, I'm trying to think if there's something to compare it to. I don't, because yeah, and maybe it's because we go into, especially Pixar, we go into it with such high expectations of rich stories. I mean, we already know it's going to be pretty. I mean, that's a given. We know Pixar is going to be pretty, but I guess we expect a certain level of storytelling and emotional depth and, you know, that something for everybody, for the whole family approach. But this one, yeah, I can't put my finger on it. It was cute. There's nothing I don't like about it. There's just not anything I love about it either.
It was the Vespa.
It was the Vespa.
The Vespa. That was where it lost you?
No, I think, as Heather mentioned, Pixar films are known for their stories. The animation is gorgeous, as everyone has mentioned, but the stories are what sell everything. If you look it up, the first 10 minutes, that story combined with the animation is what makes everybody cry. And if you can't cry in that, then you need to check your heart, okay? That's for the audience. But what I think the issue was that the film in a lot of ways was a retread plot-wise of things we've seen before from Vespa.
Vespa's put out some great films over the years. I'm a big fan of
Vespa. It was too Little Mermaid for me. Maybe that's where you're headed, Alan. The trope of it all. And I was like, how often do we see the young person from the other world want to go into the new world? And in this case, there was no obstacle to overcome. They could just magically become humans when they came on to land. I've seen this movie before.
Correct. That's where I was going. The Little Mermaid, Finding Nemo, Brave. You can look at Pinocchio with the Beauty and the Beast. Tangled, Frozen, Moana, if you want to go there. We've seen it before. Except there's no whale to make this any better. Sorry. Instead, we have pasta eating.
Yeah.
Which made me very hungry, I will admit. The whole time I'm watching this movie, I wanted a really big bowl of, like, I just wanted like plain buttered Alfredo noodles or something. It made me very hungry. And I did tear up. I did tear up at the very end of the movie, which I don't know if that says much, because I'm guaranteed to cry at any interaction between a parent and a child. Like, it's just going to happen. So, you know, at the end when he's, you know, with his mom and stuff like that, I don't like being super spoilery, but, you know, I did tear up, but yeah. Anyway, keep going. Yeah, I felt like I was like, I've watched this movie. Now I'm just hungry for pasta, but I've still seen this movie somehow.
You know what I think it is for me as we're talking about this? I think this is helping me put feet to the fire, if you will. It was really safe. There was nothing about this that took a risk. And maybe that's what it was missing for me. This may be one of their safest films that I've seen in recent years. Even a film like Onward felt like it was trying to get somewhere a little bit beyond where they were, which was, you know, the idea of grief and dealing with the loss of a parent, which I know is a Disney trope and we see it all the time. But this idea of having a half alive father felt like it was taking a step into something we hadn't seen. And maybe that's it. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Heather, I think this one's yours.
Well, no, I think that's interesting, because when I think about, you know, other Pixar movies, and either, you know, also just general Disney, you know, I know that line can often be blurry depending on which movie we're talking about. Trying to think through of, like, you know, what my favorites had versus what this one is missing. Like, you know, and I think, Steve, you said it really well, is this, it felt safe. Like, I didn't ever really feel a specific obstacle that couldn't be overcome. You know, it was just, you had the race and you had the whole, you know, humans were going to be scared of the sea monsters, but there's no explanation really of why, other than, you know, humans versus sea monsters.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was saying, yeah, exactly. They're just,
yeah. And you know, there's and then there's the moment when we, you know, obviously we know Alberto's got a story, and we hit on that a little bit, but even that could have been so much more rich. I mean, I knew where that was going, and his, you know, dad not being around and things like that. You know, even with, like, Massimo missing the arm and saying he was born that way, that right there to me would have been a moment of talking about people who are different, and how there are things that make us all unique, and we can celebrate that. We don't need to be afraid of it. And I feel like they just towed that line so carefully. There was a beautiful element that was just missing, that could have, all the pieces were there. They just weren't glued together. And when you think of some of the other Pixar movies, I feel like that's what makes them stand out. Like, you know, you look at Inside Out and you look at Up, and even, you know, for me, you know, Ratatouille is like the top of my list. There's just something that, you know, there's a fight for something, or there's a letting go of something. And this just, the growth, it was right there. And I just feel like they missed the boat.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's, here you go. You're playing softball. Here comes the pitch. Meatball right over the middle of the plate, and you end up bunting it down the third baseline. It was very safe. And I think part of that was probably due to the fact that they actually were not on the Pixar campus for any of it. They did it all from their homes. So, I mean, there were probably been some collaboration. They may have gone safe that way. I'm not saying that was the case, but at the same time, as you mentioned, Heather, there were definitely some safe moments. At the end, when you suddenly saw some of the humans suddenly morph into sea monsters, I was like, oh, okay, go with that, come on.
They were already hiding out in plain sight. I mean, like, there's
done.
And you've got the bully. I mean, you've got the classic bully who's, you know, older than everybody else, but he could have had a backstory that could have been interesting. I mean, it was just too surface level for me, especially for Pixar.
He was my favorite character.
He was a meanie to end all meanies, and he bullied the entire town. I wanted the mayor to get out there and kind of smack him into submission, but it didn't seem to happen.
He was great. They gave him no redeeming. They didn't give him a single redeeming moment. There's almost every Disney villain has a redeeming moment where they, you could see, oh, they're maybe they're more than this. Not this guy. He's just a jerk from the beginning to the end.
Classic punk, you know?
Oh, he's just awful.
Yeah, well, you know, kind of going up, but it's the same thing is, what is the obstacle for this movie? What are they trying to overcome? You know, there's the goal of the Vespa, which we've talked about, like, you know, what it is, what's it so magical, you know, what's so magical about a Vespa? And, you know, by it gets to the point where Luca wants to go to school, but there was a journey missing. I mean, it was there, but I really want to like it. And like I said, I don't not like it. It's just not one I'm going to feel like I have to watch again.
And we didn't even talk about Uncle Ugo, who was played by Sacha Baron Cohen, all people.
The voice cast is amazing. Yes. I mean, Maya Rudolph, Jacob Tremblay. I mean, like, it's great.
Here, punch his heart. Yeah.
Punch his heart. It was awesome. Yeah. I love a good anglerfish, you know?
You stay for the credits after it was all over. He had
everybody. That was probably one of my favorite parts was at the end with the little, I guess that was Giuseppe, the little fish, maybe. But yeah, I was like, where's the backstory of this? Where's the backstory? How do we even get sea monsters? Where do they come from? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, here is a question. And Alan, I'm just looking in the chat. Like, one of the questions that you posed is, one of the big conversations about this film is about it being an LGBTQ movie or not. Now, none of us are LGBTQ that I'm aware of in this conversation. But I was wondering what your feelings are about that conversation that's going on and what you think that really is rooted in.
That's a good question. I think a lot of it has to do with the way we are looking at things these days. Maybe the fact that the movie did come out in June during Pride Month, where there was a lot of rainbow washing by a lot of companies. And suddenly everything is rainbow colored, not in the sense of Noah and the Ark, but just for Pride. But I also think that individuals who saw the film, because of having that perspective, immediately started jumping to that conclusion. Oh, that's exactly what this is. This is a love story. Now, again, you know, Disney has been known to do some very interesting things like Beauty and the Beast, where, you know, you've seen
Josh Gad.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the things is, you know, during some of the screeners, Enrico Casarosa, who was the director, he said it wasn't. He specifically said the following. He said, I was really keen to talk about a friendship before girlfriends and boyfriends come in to complicate things. So this was about their friendship in that pre-puberty world where he, Luca, and then you have, you know, Alberto, and then you have Julia. It just looks to me like a really sweet kind of 6th, 7th, 8th grade kind of friendship that has, you know, materialized among the students. And I think to portray it in other ways kind of dilutes the value of that friendship sequence between the three of them. Your thoughts, Heather and Steve?
And I think, you know, that's a larger conversation as well. I mean, let's look at Falcon and the Winter Soldier. You know, since we're in this whole Disney realm and people, you know, wanting to see those opportunities in those relationships, like, you know, kind of shipping Falcon and Winter Soldier, whether it was, you know, Captain America or whatnot. And now you've got with Loki and the conversations about Loki. And I think it's difficult to navigate because everybody gets to own a piece of what they watch. You know, I think it's one of the beautiful things about film is that, yes, directors have, you know, they have their goals and their approach. But when, you know, we as individuals, when I watch a movie, there's going to be something about it that is going to be unique to me that I take away from it. And I think Luca, maybe it's that bit of neutrality to where people can read into it what makes sense to them and what makes sense to their context. And I think that's a conversation that we're seeing happen more and more, but it's also, there's a territorialism that comes with it. So, you know, people, we latch onto these characters and what we think the stories are. So when we have like a director or somebody say, that's not really the story, it's, you know, it's hard kind of not to take it personal because we have related to those characters or we've connected with those characters. And so I think it's something to where one, and this is where I feel very strongly about representation in film, that people have the opportunities to see themselves in it, whether that's the intent or not. And having to, you know, people at the same time want to shut things down. But that doesn't mean you can shut it down for somebody else who's having a different experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that's maybe this could be a film that's an opportunity to where everybody can own a little piece of it. And it's just, I think it's a hard thing to navigate right now, but it's, I think it's an openness we have to have.
I also think along those same lines that we have, I think as a society, become extremely judgmental as of late. And I think that is due in a large part to the social media platforms that we use now. We're not necessarily, you know, this is not necessarily Facebook back in, you know, 2007, where all you could do was type in text. Now we have gone from text to pictures. We've now gone from Snapchat. Now we're into Instagram. Instagram makes photos. And then they say this week that, you know, we're no longer a photo site. We are more of an experience site, kind of like TikTok. But because of that, and seeing those pictures, we are more liable to judge based off of what we see than what we read or hear. And those pictures, you know, obviously can be faked sometimes. Sometimes people type in things that aren't true, and then we put those out. We send them as memes to 6 million people. Oh, and next you know, we've all made judgment calls, and sometimes we haven't even seen what it is we're even making a judgment call about. So perhaps that's where this comes from. People, oh, this could be this and this and this, and boom, 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 okay. When it's not truly that way at all. And, you know, I mean, Jesus did say, judge not, lest you be judged. So I think that's one way to kind of focus on what we need to be doing as Christians.
Well, you know, I think you both have said some great things. I think there's a couple of things at play. This is just my opinion. I think, first of all, there's a lot of people upset that Disney hasn't done this yet. So, you know, you talk about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I don't even know if you know this or not, but Anthony Mackie actually just came under fire a couple of weeks ago for doing the exact same thing. They said, well, he said, well, you know, why can't they just be friends? Why does there have to be a relationship? And on the one hand, I understand why he said that, because it was a pretty innocent comment. He wasn't trying to distance or, you know, cut off anybody's experience or story. But he was just trying to say, well, it's just this, much like the director of the film. Well, this is really what it is to me. But Disney has not explicitly done this representation. Like the Josh Gad moment, the LeFou thing, he dances with a guy at the finale. It's blink and you miss it. And they can say, look, see? But they're people went nuts over this thing, and they hadn't even explicitly done anything. But there's a subsection of people that are looking for that representation. Just do it. And it also doesn't help, and this is the other thing that I was saying in our group chat, doesn't help that the film is structurally very similar to Call Me By Your Name, which of course was a massive hit for the and told this gay love story and became a massive commercial and commercial success, but also became sort of an Oscar darling. I don't know what it won or if anything, but I mean, it was very big at that time of year. So the comparisons are pretty clear, like they're there. But I think you've got people that are just saying, give us a story that we can connect with, give us that representation. And this looks like an opportunity for some representation. Now, I'm not saying that it shouldn't be a story about innocence and that prepubescent relationships. But again, playing it safe. And maybe that's part of the issue here. We could have stepped into a territory which could have opened the door for some bigger conversations. It felt like it could have gone that way. But at the same time, the director didn't want to take it that way, which is his prerogative. He can make a story about innocent children just building on their friendships. But man, you've got people that not only want but need to see their story on screen and have that, and Disney's been holding that back for a very, very long time. And they feel like sometimes they're getting there. They feel like they're just going to get there, and then they reel it in.
Which I was thinking about that, because when you think about, yeah, the LeFou scene, when you think about Star Wars and the rise, nice. You know, the Rise of Skywalker, when you know, is it, I mean, we could ask this question as the day is long, so, you know, we can roll with it, or you can completely, like, you know, re-record this later if you want, but, you know, the big why, and, you know, with Disney, who, I mean, I feel like Disney can do whatever Disney wants. You know, we joke about this all the time. Oh, it's Disney. Oh, it's Mouse. You know, but yet they've got a very large international audience, and you've got countries that, you know, there are certain things they are going to support and not support, and scenes that are going to be cut. And even if you look at, you know, especially, you know, I can only speak from an American context because that's my context, but this, like, giant conversation about it all. And, you know, what is keeping Disney from what is it that they're holding back, or why are they continuing to play safe, and why create a movie with such a, to many people, you know, and I feel like rightfully so, see this unspoken subtext going on. Why create a movie that's going to have all that subtext and then not cross the finish line, so to speak?
Yeah, this is definitely not Brokeback Mountain.
No.
Not so quite. Call Me By Your Name, just so you know, four Oscar nominees, or four nominations, one win for Best Adapted Screenplay.
I thought it may have gotten one for screenplay. Yes, thank you.
Why can't we be friends? I mean, you know. You know, I have to sing it here somewhere.
I love it. Fantastic. Well, I mean, transitioning through this, I mean, one of the things that Alan pointed out, and he talked about this idea of being judgmental. And I wondered how you felt about the particular ending, because this is a film that is very much about two quote unquote warring sides. And by warring sides, nobody actually does anything really to the other side. They just hate each other blindly. But how you felt about that particular storyline and what the finale says to you. And does it stick the landing? Alan's just shaking his head.
I mean, it is Olympic season, so, you know, it works. Right.
No, this one's not winning any medals. Sorry. But go ahead and repeat the question real quick.
I'm like,
I'm going to say the same thing. What did he ask?
I'm like, can you talk a little bit about how you felt the film portrayed? Maybe I should say this. How well you felt the film portrayed this idea of being judgmental, and does it stick the landing?
Okay. Well, I think some of the judgmental aspect actually comes from the parents. Mm. Parents think that, obviously, Luca is about to go into a world where he's going to be eaten alive. And by the way, there's no eating alive of sea monsters or humans. I kind of wanted to see something happen. Maybe that's just my...
Someone eat somebody, please!
You know, eat pasta, you get a little too hungry, and there you go. No, but the parents showed me something in the fact that when they came onto the shore, they were nervous, just like Luca was. And then they suddenly got this realization, ooh, we can figure out who he is. If we douse him with water, he will reveal his sea monster self. And so probably the second half of it is kind of like the Vespa half of the first. All they're doing is trying to pour water on every living being imaginable to turn them into their son. And I think that is a subtle bit of judging right there. You know, oh, yeah, you don't look like me. So guess what? You know, I'm going to see if I can change you. Mm-hmm. So That's at least how I took it. Now, in the end, obviously, they figure out who he is. You know, it's rainy. Everybody turns into who they really, really, really are. And there's a train waiting to take Julia and Luca to Hogwarts.
I was just going to say, if that's subtle judgment to you, I want to know what overt judgment looks like. Because I'm pretty sure dumping water on other people's kid, like, I felt that was very obvious. I just want to know what obvious judgment looks like to Alan.
It usually involves Thor and his hammer.
Wrong series. Wrong segment of the organization. No, but Alan, you really got me thinking about that. There was a little bit of clicking, because if you think about it, we've got three sets of parents that we're kind of comparing. We've got Luca's parents. First off, he's got two of them, and they've been very sheltering. They have all these expectations and assumptions about what is on the other side of the island. You've got Alberto, who has talked about his dad being far away and then realized his dad has abandoned him. And then you've got Julia, who's, you know, from a divorced, you know, essentially a split household. She spends summers with her dad, who very much believes in her and wants to support her dreams. And then she goes and has school year with her mom. And she seems, you know, that's a really interesting point you brought up, just from when we think about the comparisons among parenting, you know, especially knowing Disney kind of does that thing with parents. And it just kind of got me thinking about how in Luca's situation, you know, he was raised to believe a certain thing about a different group of creatures in this case, and doesn't know why. There's been no explanation really as to why he's supposed to feel a certain way. And then, you know, Alberto is having to learn everything on his own. And when he realizes the stuff he knows isn't correct, that's a big identity moment, because he didn't have anybody to guide him into what he needed to be learning. And then you've got Julia, who demonstrates that example of, you know what, you know, my parents are in two different places, but they love me and support me, and they're, you know, helping me be me. And maybe that's, you know, kind of one of those pieces within this whole movie that I didn't pick up on right away. But yeah, I mean, Luca's got a set of beliefs. He doesn't really know why he has them. And that's what he's got to go kind of undo. And again, it was kind of played safe. That could have been so much more.
If he had gone with Uncle Ugo for just a few minutes down to the deep, dark netherworld, how would the movie have changed? I mean, I saw that at first and I thought Dory, I thought this big, nasty anglerfish was going to come out of nowhere and was going to snap him shut.
I think the anglerfish got him.
I'm back.
There you
Did you go too deep, Alan?
I did. I had to go find Uncle Ugo and punch his heart a few times again and restarted there. What did I miss?
You were in mid-sentence.
Okay. Well, what I was saying was that this might be a very different film if Luca went with Uncle Ugo down to the deep, dark recesses of, you know, whatever that was down there. And I keep thinking of Dory and Marlin and Finding Nemo and this big anglerfish that was going to snap them up, and what that would have been like. Because Uncle Ugo does not remind me of somebody who was a good parent. He reminds me of the big brother who's, you know, much older, does not have kids, and is just, you know, the world is shut in around him. And I thought it was always so interesting that the mom said, you know, I love you, right? Yes. You know, I love you, right? Yes. I'm about to send you down to Uncle Ugo for the entire summer. You know, I love you, right? No. And that's when you get the runaway. So I think that would be very, very interesting. But you got the parent stuff, which I think you're dead on. We all have different parenting styles, and I think you got to see some of that on display.
You know, I'm on board with this. To me, it was very much about cultural ignorance.
Yes.
You've got two sides that just don't understand each other. And, you know, they're the sea monsters because they look different. And in an aspect that could be mined for more deeply is the fact that these mermen and mermaids, or whatever you may call them, have to change to look like the other people in order to be accepted in that culture. I think there's something to be said about that. I think that's actually, given the fact of how much I've called this playing it safe, there's something quite profound about this idea of, you know, having to force yourself to look like these people in order to be accepted. So in that sense, the ending kind of works. But to me, it was just all so fast. Like years, decades, maybe even hundreds of years of hatred and fear, stories being told, and one bike race and a man with one arm says, he's okay. And then everyone's fine. And I'm like, this was too easy. Like, there, and what kind of bugged me was that it was all about one side. I think they should have gone under the sea in some way. Someone should have. They should have brought the girl under the sea for one scene to show her that maybe her biases were wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like, because we knew, was it, who's his buddy's name? What's his best friend's name again?
Alberto.
So Luca and Alberto are both these under the sea. I hate calling them monsters, but yes, these monsters. To me, it was like, man, they, again, rich ideas that never get explored. The most that we get out of the ending was, you know, they're monsters. They're okay. Like, Luca, you don't have to look like us, but he doesn't even say that, but they had just all sort of come out at the end and they're like, hey, guess what? I'm a monster. Grandma, you're here too. Like, it just felt like it was all one-sided in terms of learning to me. And that's what I think really bugged me. Again, not a terrible movie, but a missed opportunity. Like if they, maybe that was it too. They had so many things they could have delved in. Pick one and delve into it more thoroughly, delve into it more complexly and deeply. But go ahead, Alan.
I think that's really unique. Yeah. Throw some scuba gear on Julie and send her down into the depths to learn what it's like. That really does sound interesting. And then she could go down with Uncle Ugo into the deep, dark recesses of her heart and of his heart and see what needs to be changed, that she might even become better than that. And then she might be able to deal with the nasty bully who drives the Vespa off into the sunset.
Yeah, I think you're right on to it. I also think you might be a little too obsessed with Uncle Ugo, but though he's arguably the best.
I don't think you're wrong, Steve.
You
can't. Starting to wonder about Alan here for a minute.
See, our hearts are so deep and dark anyway. That's why, you know, Jesus needs to come in and clean us up. I mean,
I see what you did there. I see what you did there.
He Jesus juked us.
You knew that was coming, right?
Steve, I think that's a really good point. You know, when you think about, do you do a lot of little things okay, or do you do one or two things really, really well? Like, you know, we talk about that in like our jobs and life. I don't know, maybe that's just me. But this movie had potential to go in like six different directions. And because it didn't seem like they picked one or two and tried to hit on everything at like a surface level, it didn't go deep enough. And I think that's a really good point, because there are so many elements that were just like, oh man, that was a missed opportunity. Oh man, that was a missed opportunity. Oh man. Like, you know, if you had gone that direction instead of the other direction, no, sorry, now that's a missed opportunity. And I think that's a really good point. And yeah, when you think about like the character growth, and like, you know, oh, it was one plate of pasta and all of a sudden his parents are like totally cool. You know, there's a sincerity almost lacking. Maybe it is. It felt rushed. And there were just so many elements, again, like we've said so many times, that just didn't blend.
Right. At the end, when the credits are going, if you watched really closely, you saw that speed up, that rush when you see him go to, you know, Genoa with Julia, and then he gets in school, and then you start seeing what happens where he starts getting water on him. He suddenly turns into a monster in front of everybody, and then you see her mom, and then you see some other things. This is the kind of stuff that you would see in a sequel. But obviously you're not getting a sequel in this case. There's and no if you Tuca. Are getting a sequel, it's going to be a mess.
There's no Tuca coming. See what I did there? I'm hilarious.
I see what you did there, but I wasn't going to acknowledge it.
Yeah. I wanted to say that, a second time just so that I, no. You know what? It's fine. Like the education storyline I loved as well. I actually loved it, and now I hate it based on this conversation because – again, Luca's the only one that learns anything.
True.
All the wisdom is on the surface. All the people under the water don't have a stinking clue about anything. They don't. You would think they would have something to contribute to the conversation. They don't.
And can I be completely honest on something here?
No. Yes.
Okay. We can edit it out if we don't like your honesty. Don't worry.
At the beginning of the film, when he went out with his little shepherd's crook, I suddenly thought that this movie was going to be something like a VeggieTales film with all the little fish bouncing together like sheep and little David over here handling the whole situation. But that would have been fairly interesting. But again, that didn't materialize either. I think one of the things you mentioned when we were looking at our chat was about knowledge, you know, that what is wisdom? How do you get wisdom? Is it important? Obviously, in Proverbs, you know, says, you know, a lot about this. I didn't notice that the parents actually imparted a lot of wisdom to Luca. It's like, stay away from the deep, dark cliff, just like Finding Nemo. Don't go to the drop-off because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yep.
And so that's why, you know, it's important to have wisdom. It's also important to be able to do something with that wisdom. Just having your mind fill up with tons of stuff doesn't do you much good if you can't do anything. I mean, in Acts, one of the kings said, you know, hey, Paul, your great learning is driving you insane. And Paul eventually says, you know, hey, as long as I can use this and transfer this and teach you about Christ and everybody else, let's do it. But again, if you're not going to have that knowledge, or you're going to get that knowledge and not have nothing to do with it, then it's going to serve you no good. Alberto, he only knew his little portion. All he cared about was a Vespa, Vespa, Vespa. And Emilio, I think was his name, the bully, all he cared about was just running the town and eating pasta once a year.
You know, yeah, Alberto was Vespa, 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 but he didn't end the movie with a Vespa. He sacrificed that. He had this dream, and because of wanting to see Luca fulfill his new dream, he said goodbye to that dream. And I think that is one of those elements to where and I don't want to oversimplify it, but the purity of children right there in that moment for me. Whereas, you know, my kids, they regularly are like, mommy, if my dollar will help you not stress about money, here is my dollar. And, you know, or, you know, I look at my teenager, oh gosh, can't believe I'm saying that out loud, because she's got a few more weeks, but I might as well just accept it and not try to run from it anymore. To her 4-year-old little sister to be like, well, this is special to me, but if Colette wants to use it, I'm going to let my little sister use it because it's going to make her happy and bring her joy. And, you know, those are the moments too within this movie that are there, but they get lost or they get shuffled to the end for a quick emotional pull. And I love that moment. And, you know, and he Alberto had, you know, worked with Luca's parents and, you know, Julia's mother knew about it. Everybody had worked together to make this dream of knowledge and wisdom in school come true for Luca. And it was just like, it just felt like it was breezed over and it was such a powerful moment, but we had worked up to it so quickly. I didn't have time to savor it. And it's just that pure moment that I see reflected in like my own children. And I didn't, again, I keep coming back and I keep trying to find ways to really love this movie. So I'm looking for these things and these moments. Mm-hmm. And even the, you know, maybe the whole hype of the Vespas, because, you know, they knew he was going to give it away or sell it.
Yeah.
So they had to give something, they had to create something that was going to have all this value so that when it was sacrificed, we could feel that moment. I don't know why they chose Vespa. I'm sure there's reason for it, like we've been talking about. But again, it's just, I wanted it to hit home. And it did like this much, but I wanted it to be bigger. I just wanted it to be bigger. I wanted a bigger fish.
I like that. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, in terms of the learning storyline, I thought so much of it was just tied to fear. And the whole thing about Luca was he was the first one of his species that wasn't afraid to come up and learn. As I've said before, though, and I think this is what I think really frustrates me now as I think about it, it was totally one way. I don't even remember a scene where the girl says, tell me something that I don't know. They're living in a wondrous underwater world, and they're an entirely new species, and they're getting all the knowledge. You know, there's no sharing.
She shared the, not about Earth, but she shared about the universe.
Yes, she does.
Correct.
But she doesn't ask any questions. She doesn't ask anything of Luca or Alberto. You would think that one question would come up, but I can't think of a single time where she asked them about themselves.
Yeah, I think it was just a "where are you from" moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's a really interesting point, is to the one-sidedness. Because at the same time, I think though, and again, I'm always looking for ways to see points in movies that I may have missed, or even when I don't, you know, I'm not 100% on board or like it or whatnot. The idea of one-sided education is not new. If we think about it, especially with like current cultural conversations, it's, you know, it doesn't matter like what side, quote unquote, you're falling on. It's the expectation that the other side has to do all of the learning, or that our side has to, like, thankfully I am part of a circle and individuals and groups and a community that is, let's pull all of our learnings together. Let's journey this together. Let's learn about the things we don't know, but let's do it in community. Mm-hmm. This was kind of lacking in that for me, to Steve's points, is there, here's a community like accepting them, but at the same time, it's on their terms. And I think that's such a high expectation in humanity in general, that I will accept you on my terms. And this was an opportunity for them to say, you know what, let's accept each other on no terms. Let's just accept each other. And it was like I think they try to kind of go around this at the end when she's like, you know, nobody's going to accept him. And the grandmother is like, well, there will be some people who will. So again, it's all these little moments where they touch on it, but just don't drive it home.
I have one more thought, and this involves dreams. And you brought that up a little bit, Heather. How far will you go to get your dream? Obviously he was willing to leave his mom, leave his dad, transfer and move to a place he didn't know. Ooh, doesn't this sound a little bit like Moses? But eventually the dream is realized. But again, how far are we willing to go? I mean, are we willing to take the first obstacle that runs in front of us? I was telling a bunch of students last week, I hit an obstacle in front of me when I was driving down the freeway, blocked off by two cars on both sides, and I'm staring down the barrel of a shovel directly in the middle of my lane, and I'm going 70 miles an hour. What do I do? Well, I ended up running over it, and, you know, God was very faithful and no damage. But still, what obstacles are you willing to take care of in order to get through to get that dream? He had to get a land. He had to adapt himself to the culture. He had to eat gelato. He had to meet Julia. He had to deal with the bully And in the end, he had to learn to ride a bicycle, which was his, you know, his struggle. And then finally he accomplished all that. And then there you go.
But again, what was his dream? Like, are we talking about Alberto or are we talking about Luca? Because Alberto, I think, had a much clearer dream than Luca. I think
I would agree.
His dream eventually is to go to school.
Right. Luca may have not known, but that dream was realized as he sat with Julia and as they talked about astronomy, and she gave him the book to look at, and he suddenly realized, ooh, you know, I really want to learn about all this stuff. So maybe it was something that materialized later on. But yeah, you're right about Alberto. Finally got his name right. He did. He was wanting to change things up, especially with his father. You know, he kept leaving those marks on the wall. They didn't discuss that far enough at all. That really bothered me. They should have gone another 15 minutes. If there was another 10 or 15 minutes into this film, we might be talking potential classic, but nope.
Yeah, see, again, I think I feel like the key words that keep coming up, missed opportunity. That is a fascinating story to tell. Where is his dad? He's checking the marks. That's a significant backstory. Anyway, yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and if you think about it too, I think it's a really good point. Luca, what drives Luca to the surface to begin with is, I mean, it's kind of a bit of a curiosity, but it's more of a rejection of what his parents have instilled upon him. Like, it's not so much it's not so much he's looking for something as he is looking to get away from something, just to start. And then once he's tasted that, it morphs into something where there's opportunity and some freedom and to figure things out for himself and to, you know, then education and whatnot. And he forms relationships. But yeah, I mean, when you look at that kind of like driving factor, it is, I don't like what they're saying to me, so I'm going to go over here.
Yeah. Well, this has been fun to you all. Let us screen it or skip it. Luca, screen it or skip it.
I'm going to say screen it, but be ready to talk about why it should be skipped.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever said skip it. But I'm going to say skip it like that. It takes a lot for me to, if I'm going to spend an hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes, I'm going to pick something different that's going to really, you know, connect with me. And I'm just going to say skip it. I feel so guilty saying that. I never say skip it.
That's okay. We're not sponsored by Disney or Vesper.
It's not bad. It's just, I could have watched something else. I have limited time.
You have to watch Marvel movies at 2 a.m.
I have to rewatch things I've already watched.
I mean, you know what? I mean, I'm going to say skip it. I don't feel bad about it, but it's not because it's awful. It's not awful. It's just so tepid. It's like drinking a cup of warm water. It's like not enjoyable enough to do anything. You just want to spit it out of your mouth. I mean, I don't know. I thought it was beautiful. And
very pretty.
And here's the thing. The music's great. It is in your Disney Plus already for no additional cost. So you'll probably watch it anyway. But like, it's, you don't need to.
Which it makes you wonder why.
Doesn't make me wonder why.
Well, why did, yeah, you would think if, okay, so it's not a premiere access paid for. It was just straight on to the regular Plus.
But to be fair, all the Pixar releases have been straight to D Plus. Soul was straight to D Plus with no cost.
Right.
And Onward didn't have a cost, but it started in theaters technically 3 weeks before the pandemic shut everything down, and it went immediately to Disney.
Okay.
But so it
Raya did suit. Not.
Pardon?
But Raya did not.
Raya's Raya not Pixar.
Right. But it was still animated 3D Plus, and they went ahead and made it premiere.
And Raya, I think, was fantastic. Soul was fantastic. This is just bland. to me. I watched Peter Rabbit 2 with the kids this week, and I got to write a review for it, and that was way more fun, and I was found it way more engaging than I did this one. So there, I just did a podcast on Peter Rabbit 2 at the same time. But I mean, it's a skip it. You don't need to, you just don't need to see it. Anyway, I think we've made our points. Thank you to you both. I really appreciate having you on. I love our conversations. So thank you again for joining me for this one.
Yes, you owe us some pasta now.
I owe you
pasta. I need a snack. I'm hungry.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll wrap it up, and then you guys can go have your fettuccine Alfredo. For you at home, a reminder, you can find us wherever podcasts are available. And if you go to screenfish.net and go to the podcast page, you can go download Fishing for More, which are small group questions you can have to help get the conversation started with the people that you see the film with, or that you know who have seen the film. We will be back next week. And another announcement as well. Next week, you will have, or I believe it's this coming Monday, but I could have the wrong date, on our YouTube channel, which has been continuing to start put out interviews and hopefully more podcasts. Our first podcast series will be on YouTube this week called Movies You Missed, where we pit generations against one another in a battle of film supremacy, and we learn from both sides. So we're already up on Luca. But no, it honestly, it's been a lot of fun. And some of the Teen Fish folks have been teamed up with us to do those things. And they will be on YouTube as well. You'll be able to find those starting next week as well. And I've lost my train of thought. So that's time to shut up. So thank you again to you both. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.
Silencio Bruno!